Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Pentagon held its fire till late Friday afternoon, but the news still hit the aerospace industry like a thunderclap. The next generation of air tankers refueling American military planes will be built on Europe's Airbus, a $40 billion contract, and maybe $100 billion ultimately, going not to Boeing, which has always made the tankers, but to a consortium based in Toulouse, France. Yes, there's an American partner, and there will be assembly and jobs in Alabama. But this is an earthquake. This hour, On Point, we ask why it's happened. You can join the conversation. Is there something wrong with this picture? At a time of vanishing jobs and economic woe, should billions and billions in U.S. tax dollars be going for Europe's Airbus for the U.S. military? Did Boeing deserve to lose? Is this, too, just the new world we live in? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're going to hash this out today with former presidential candidate and ranking Republican member of the House Armed Services Committee, Duncan Hunter, with Norm Dix, Democrat from Washington State, Boeing's Manufacturing Center, and more. But first today, we turn to Richard Abulafia. He's vice president for analysis at the Thiel Group, an aerospace and defense consulting firm. He joins us from Washington, D.C. Mr. Abulafia, thanks for being here.
A pleasure, Tom.
$40 billion, maybe $100 billion before it's all done. It sounds to a layperson like a big, big deal, is it?
Well, it is pretty huge. Even if you look beyond the magnitude of the numbers, you've got a couple of events that you could characterize as seismic here. For one, you've got the contract going to what Don Rumsfeld used to call old Europe. It's not a strong ally like Britain. It's going to France and Germany. That in itself is pretty extraordinary.
France and Germany and Italy and Spain, remind me if I'm wrong, but the same countries who are currently unwilling to put their soldiers in front of a bullet in Afghanistan while we've got 30-some thousand American soldiers there or headed there.
Well, that's certainly true, and that's one of the key things. The other key thing that's happened here is I believe this is possibly the first time in the history of the world that a contract has gone to a foreign manufacturer. In any country, a foreign manufacturer, when there was a domestically produced direct equivalent, apples and apples, if you will,
yeah.
And that's extraordinary.
But in fact, when you look at the side-by-side, there wasn't or isn't a side-by-side identical apple out of Boeing. I mean, this plane is bigger, it delivers fuel more quickly, it carries more passengers, more patients if it's wounded it's supposed to carry. This is a different plane from what Boeing was offering.
Well, that's certainly true, but we're talking a difference of about 20 to 25%. That's as direct as it gets, really. And there's also the fact that both planes have exactly one boom. That is to say, if your mission is purely air-to-air refueling, both are pretty close in terms of capabilities for that mission.
That's not the way, of course, the Air Force put it. Here's General Arthur Light, commander of Air Force Mobility Command, at the press conference late Friday, the time when you try to bury stories, explaining why the U.S. Air Force opted for the Airbus tanker over the Boeing tanker.
From a warfighter's perspective, and I know the team looked at a whole number of things, but from my perspective, I can sum it up in one word: more. More passengers, more cargo, more fuel to offload, more patients that we can carry, more availability, more flexibility, and more dependability.
More. Richard Abulafia, you consult in the business. Is it clear that the Airbus is just a better plane on the face of it?
I'm not so sure it's better, but from the Air Force's standpoint, they've done a very rigorous job of assessing the capabilities and overall merits of the plane, and they've reached a decision, and they've been pretty transparent about that. So they think so, and I think that matters an awful lot. Perhaps it's the overwhelming consideration here.
You know, I'm not sure how to look at this. I mean, on the one hand, we live in a globalized economy. Private industry is buying all kinds of things from all over all the time. On the other hand, is military spending, and should it be, different? I mean, this is billions and billions and billions of dollars. By the time you get to $100 billion, which it could be if they go on to supply to all the replacements for these Eisenhower-era tankers that are being phased out,
We could be in the $100 billion range. That's in the range of a stimulus package. I mean, that's gigantic. Should countries keep that money in the pockets of their own workers when they're building planes for their own military?
Well, I think there's three issues that address that. One, it's probably important to keep the Air Force's assessment of the plane completely separate from economic and industrial security issues. And if you just look at the needs of the warfighter, the Air Force has made its decision. Now, getting back to the economic and industrial concerns, well, first of all, the Airbus plane does have some jobs in this country, maybe not quite as many as the Boeing product, but it does have a substantive economic presence here.
No small number. They're going to build a new factory in Alabama and new roads and everything else to go with it. And they may have something, a lot, maybe 25,000 jobs assembling there what comes over from Europe.
Well, that's right. And, of course, it's also the subsystems which make up, well, the majority of the value of an aircraft. So what with the GE engines and avionics and other things built in the U.S., it has a substantial industrial footprint, too.
On the other hand, Boeing says it's tied to 44,000 jobs in its network of workers and suppliers. That's an even bigger number, and that's an American company.
Well, that's true. But of course, you have to keep this in perspective. And that's the most important thing about this contract. We're talking about 15 jetliners a year, $3 billion footprint. That's certainly nothing to sneeze at, especially in a time of flattening defense budgets. But looking at the commercial jetliner market, Boeing alone is ramping up to 550, 600 jets a year, worth well in excess of $30 to $40 billion. So you kind of have to keep this in perspective.
So we'll keep the scale of it in mind. We take your point. I still can't get over the idea, though. I mean, you say the Air Force should keep it separate. Maybe it should. But if this was a good plane and these are American workers, don't their jobs matter? We see how much pressure manufacturing jobs are under in this country. So that's a question. And then there's the question, to my mind, let's say it is the better plane. Let's say Airbus is the better plane. Can we accept the idea that Boeing is not at the top of the world game in avionics in aerospace? Isn't that supposed to be one of our huge last bastions of competitive edge in this globalized world?
Well, Boeing is hugely successful, both as a defense player and as a commercial market player. The new 787, which basically replaces the older 767, is the most successful aircraft in history, with almost 900 orders before it even gets delivered for the first time. That's an extraordinary achievement. So I don't think there's any worry here about Boeing's competitiveness and its ability to stay America's biggest industrial exporter.
We've got other issues here, too, but let's listen to a little more from General Arthur Light. Again, last Friday, making this announcement, asked here whether the Pentagon might expect some blowback from Congress on its decision to buy, to send this big contract to the partnership of Northrop Grumman in the U.S. And the folks who make Europe's Airbus.
And the foreign element, do you think that you're going to get some blowback from Capitol Hill?
This is an American tanker. It's flown by American airmen. It has a big American flag on the tail. And every day, it'll be out there saving American lives.
Let's go to Seattle, out in Boeing country. James Wallace joins us. He covers the aerospace industry for the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. James Wallace, thanks very much for being with us today.
Yeah, hi, Tom. My pleasure.
In Boeing country, is this seen as an American tanker?
No, it's and it's not an American tanker. It may be, assembled in Alabama. But it's an Airbus airplane. It's an Airbus platform. The A330, has gone head to head against the 767. It's seen as an Airbus plane, and it's touched off a political and union firestorm out here.
What's the sense among workers in your territory there, James? What does it mean to Boeing workers that this contract goes essentially to Europe?
Well, there were a lot of job numbers thrown around by both sides, and if you dig down deeper, I'm not sure how those job numbers actually stand up. It's not going to mean any layoffs out here. In fact, Boeing's been hiring people. As Richard said earlier, they're having to ramp up production. They've sold a record number of planes the last 3 years, and they're actually hiring people on the 767 line just to finish off the commercial planes. The problem for the workers is, like I said earlier, it's Boeing has been supplying the tankers to the Air Force. They had won the initial contract for 100 planes. That fell through because of the scandal, and the workers simply can't imagine why Boeing lost this. It's it's not so much just the jobs. I think it's part of the pride that they have in working for Boeing.
But let's look at that contract that was blown. It makes you wonder if Boeing somehow blew this itself, or maybe it was blown out of Washington. I mean, this is back in, what, 02? They had a $23 billion deal for 100 767 tankers. And then the Air Force's second-ranking acquisition official at the Pentagon, Darlene Druyan, it emerged that she had negotiated a top job with Boeing's chief financial officer, Michael Sears, during those contract talks. That's way out of bounds. They were both fired. They both landed in prison. I mean, is this seen as payback for Boeing's ethical lapse in dangling a job in front of a top Pentagon acquisition official?
Well, you've got all sorts of theories as to why the other tanker won. But there was a very interesting memo that was put out yesterday by Lauren Thompson, who of the Lexington Institute, a think tank. And Lauren's got some very, very close contacts with the Pentagon and with the Air Force. And he said he had talked to officials over the weekend who were very close to the tanker decision. And his memo said that the Airbus tanker beat Boeing in every single category, and not only by a little bit, by a wide measure. And initially, I think all the Air Force people were saying that they wanted more booms in the sky, in other words, a smaller airplane. And Thompson said that the Northrop BADS people did such a great job of analyzing this and breaking it down that the Air Force changed its mind and decided to go with a bigger airplane.
James Wallace, stand by in Seattle, if you would, with the Seattle Post-Intelligencer and Richard Abulafia in Washington. We're talking about the big U.S. Air Force air tanker deal gone essentially to Airbus. 800-423-8255 is our number. $40 billion contract. 800-423-TALK. Is this right? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Right now, we're joined from Washington by Congressman Norm Dix, Democratic Congressman from Washington's 6th District, which includes Tacoma. Congressman Dix, thanks very much for being with us today.
We're glad to be on your show.
Is this the U.S. Air Force doing the right thing by American defense, or something wrong with this picture?
Well, I think it's a big mistake. I think the first mistake that the Air Force made was we wanted them to take into account the fact that this airplane, the 330, is subsidized.
That's the Airbus, the European plane.
Right,
yeah.
That it was subsidized, that the United States government had brought to the WTO a case against Airbus for illegal subsidy. And under political pressure, the Air Force decided not to take this into account.
So maybe that means that they're going to subsidize our military. Maybe that's a good deal for American taxpayers. We get a cheaper subsidized plane.
Well, I mean, this is something that is being done illegally. I'm not sure we want to be enhancing an illegal practice. Okay, that's number one.
Yep.
Number two, they said in their RFP that they wanted a medium-sized airplane. And that's why Boeing bid the 767. And my view of this is that had the Air Force said that it wanted a large airplane, Boeing would have bid the 777. So there was a bait and switch operation by the Air Force here, saying they wanted one thing and then going to something else. Also, none of this is proven. Boeing has delivered a tanker to Japan. Airbus is behind a couple years on its program with Australia, much to the concern of the Australians. So we have a paper program here. Also, I think the News Tribune in my district said it quite well. Mm. The Air Force has made a decision here, but it's really up to Congress under the Constitution to decide what the policy should be. Should we give away a contract, the second largest defense contract in the history of the country, when our industrial base needs to be protected here in the United States? And there's no doubt in my mind that if Congress should stop this and give this contract to Boeing, and that's what we'd have to do because we want to protect America's industrial base and preserve the 40,000 jobs in our country now that we're in a recession. You know, when this whole thing started, it started when the United States economy was in much better shape. And frankly, nobody up here could conceive that the Air Force would actually give this to Airbus. Nobody conceived of that. So I think, and you know, people talk about the scandal at Boeing. I was heavily involved in getting the first contract through the Air Force, the Defense Department, and I can tell you
back in '02 Darlene before the Sweetheart Druyan, deal came out. Yeah,
Darlene Druyan had left the government 6 months before this deal was put together by Pete Aldridge in May of 2003. She had, my view is, she had very little of anything to do with this. The final terms were all reached by other people, and yet Senator McCain used his power on the House Senate Armed Services Committee to insist that this thing be killed and recompeted and to bring in the European competitor.
Because it looked wrong to him. It looked like a sweetheart deal. It looked like an inside cozy deal.
Remember.
Yeah.
The terms that Boeing gave in this contract were that the Air Force would get the lowest price that Boeing sold any 767 for commercially.
Yeah.
I think it was a great deal. And the other thing about that deal was that we would have started back in 2003. By killing it, we've now delayed 4 years, and we may well delay again because it's ultimately the Congress who has the power of the purse.
But still,
and can decide whether we fund this thing or not, because we may say, in our judgment, the Air Force made a mistake here. We need to do this by an American company. We need to protect the American jobs. And I think overwhelmingly, the American people would support that decision.
It's in your backyard, so of course you're for it. On the other hand, we hear your argument, but Congressman Dix, the U.S. Air Force presumably wants to fly the best refueling tankers it can have up there. Its airmen and so do the navies depend on these tankers, and they've looked at this, and they've said, despite the fact that Boeing's cheaper, this other one delivers more pounds of fuel per minute, it can carry more patients, wounded soldiers. Well, why didn't Boeing know? Did Boeing blow this?
Wait a minute, sir.
Yeah.
Remember, the RFP said a mid-sized airplane.
Well, Airbus figured it out. Why didn't Boeing?
Here's the bottom line. If the Air Force had said it wanted a large airplane, Boeing would have bid the 777. So what we have here is bait and switch. We want a mid-sized airplane. Boeing does what the Air Force asked for, and Airbus comes in and used all the political pressure it could to say we want to. You can't disadvantage us. We want our additional capability, our size, to count in the evaluation.
Let us understand.
In my judgment, I've been doing this for 29 years. I'm the vice chairman of the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee. I'll just tell you, from my perspective, the Air Force has mishandled this, and we have every right in Congress to stop this program and go back and say we're going to do what we did in 2003. We're going to give this thing to Boeing. We're going to negotiate the best price possible. We're going to protect the jobs in the U.S. economy.
Congressman, I want to understand where you stand philosophically here. Let's say...
The hell with philosophy.
Well,
in my district.
As a congressman, we understand that. But let's say the Airbus had a better plane that was going to be better for U.S. national defense. Would you still go for the American-made Boeing product, even if Airbus was manifestly better?
Boeing can build a big plane. We can use the 777, and Boeing has built 950 tankers, you know, over its career. Airbus hasn't built one, and the one that they're building for Australia is 2 years behind. On the boom that they get superior ratings for, it has never passed fuel. How can they get ratings like that if the thing has never even been tested? We're talking about a paper airplane by a European company that is subsidized, and EADS has been involved in all kinds of illegal activities over the years in selling these Airbuses. This whole thing it just stinks. And I think we should stop it.
European Aeronautics Defense and Space Company. Jim Wallace, in Seattle, you write close to Norm Dix's home district here. Do you think there's a snowball's chance that this will be turned around, or does it look like a done deal to you?
Well, clearly, as Congressman Dix, points out, the funding, which is all important, comes out of Congress. And if there's enough opposition in Congress, that could matter. But this was a very damning memo that came out yesterday that I referred to earlier by Lauren Thompson, who
at the Lexington Institute, saying that on every count.
And I mean, he talked to some of the people, obviously, who were very close to this decision, and he pointed out in his memo that I'll quote from it. He said, the reviewers concluded that if they funded the Northrop Grumman proposal, they could have 49 Superior tankers operating by 2013, whereas if they funded the Boeing proposal, they would have only 19 considerably less capable planes in that year. So something happened during this competition that made the Air Force believe that the A330 platform, which, by the way, both these are commercial mid-sized planes.
The Airbus,
777 is considerably bigger than an A330. But they concluded that the Airbus airplane and the Northrop proposal were superior to Boeing.
Richard Abulafia, you're in Washington. Yeah, in your community, Richard, do you hear, what's the drumbeat? Do people think Congress will turn this around? Down in Alabama, they're awfully happy with this new deal.
It's quite a firestorm. One thing to keep in mind is that the EADS product is basically a Republican district product, whereas the Boeing plane is far more important to Democratic districts. So a lot depends on what happens in November. But if the Democrats get control of the presidency, of House Armed Services, Senate Armed Services, I think there's a good chance that either the Boeing line is basically added to the funding. Basically, you get equal procurement of both, and Congress inserts cash for that. Or there's a remote chance, it's certainly possible, that this contract is derailed.
Let's go to Edward, calling in from Boston, Massachusetts. Edward, you're on with the whole gang here, including Congressman Dix from Tacoma.
Hello.
Hi.
I lived in El Segundo. I grew up in El Segundo, California, which for decades was a center of military and civilian aircraft production in America.
Yeah.
I lived in England for several years, where I read in the newspapers that the British government has bought our military and civilian products for their use.
Lots of countries have.
Lots of countries have. And now that we've made hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars by selling our products to other countries,
yeah,
I don't see why they can't compete with us to sell their products. How dare we tell other countries that they should develop themselves and then complain when they get a contract?
Congressman Dix, what
really arrogant.
Yeah, we hear it. Edward, thank you very much. Congressman Dix, what do you say?
Well, I say is what we're talking about here is the industrial base of the United States of America. And I believe in this situation, the Air Force made a mistake. They should have gone with the Boeing proposal. Isn't it terrible that the Air Force is leaking information like a sieve to Lauren Thompson, who is highly supported by Northrop Grumman financially?
Airbus's partner here,
And without even having debriefed the Boeing company so that they can respond to this leak. And so, you know, the Air Force again here, I think, is... And Lauren Thompson is telling people that he got the information from the Air Force. So there's no question that they're leaking the information to him before they give Boeing a debriefing.
Congressman,
this is wrong as well. Now let's go to the fundamental question.
Yep.
The United States Congress has a responsibility to represent the American people and to make sure the decisions we make are in our national interest. I think this is a mistake. The only reason this happened was because of the political pressure by Senator McCain. Both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have come out and said they think this ought to be reconsidered. The Speaker of the House yesterday came out and said she thinks it ought to be reconsidered. I personally believe this is a mistake, that we need to protect our industrial base, and that we need to be concerned about spare parts. What if the French get upset with us about some foreign policy decision, and we're relying on Airbus to give spare parts for our tankers?
We're all in NATO. Isn't that enough? We've been allies for decades.
I'm not willing to take that risk, okay?
Even with the Europeans, then you can't trust anybody.
Risk. What's that?
If you can't trust the Europeans, our old NATO partners, then you can't trust anyone in the world?
I know, but you know how the French are?
Well,
the French can be very peculiar at times. I mean, even in NATO, they've taken a very bizarre role.
Congressman, a lot of people want to speak with you.
To you is, hey, it's our tax dollars, and we are the Congress elected by the American people. The American people, I'm hearing them say they want this built by an American company, and that's what we're going to try to do.
Let me take a call from Iowa, Iowa City. Mary, you're on the air.
Thank you. This is globalization's chickens come home to roost, and you can put George Bush's face and McCain's face on it.
What about Bill Clinton's? He brought us NAFTA. He championed globalization. I mean, maybe this is a good thing.
Well, it's there, and the Republicans thought it was grand, and even Bill Clinton thought it was grand, so we got judgment. But the Air Force is supposed to know best, and if this war on terror is an eternal war, we need to take the Air Force's advice. This is what Bush said. He's going to take the general's advice. Now, I'm saying that maybe the general said that France makes the best. Nobody has been paying attention when France was tracking Bush in the Middle East, selling all those atomic reactors to Saudi Arabia and the Emirates.
Mary, we've got your point. Globalization coming home to roost, you say. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Richard Abulafia, you're the consultant here. Is this just the way the world works today? If we want the best at the best price and the Air Force surveys it, the congressman doesn't like the way they did it, but nevertheless, is this what globalization means? Even when it's $100 billion, if it's going to go to Airbus, it's going to go to Airbus.
I think that's right. The defense industry is basically following the broader economy towards globalization. If you follow the logic that the broader economy has done very well, both in terms of cost and quality of goods, because of globalization, that it stands to reason that the defense industry would prosper the same way. Now, there is an argument for economic and industrial security and keeping jobs at home, but that argument could apply to cars and a whole bunch of protectionist issues, and I don't think anyone would want to turn the clock back on globalization for the broader economy.
We're talking about tankers for aerial refueling.
But are you against globalization then, Congressman Dix? Does this mean you're not on board with a globalized economy?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm all for selling our airplanes all over the world and being competitive.
We do it. We've done it for years, as our caller points out. We've sold to many other countries.
Listen, I'm all for selling our airplanes anywhere we can sell them. I think that's fine. And I just think on this issue, one, because they didn't take subsidy into account. Two, because there was bait and switch. They said they wanted a medium-sized plane, and then all of a sudden they take a big plane that without giving Boeing a fair chance to change its proposal. I think because we have to worry about spare parts, and we have a plane that hasn't ever passed fuel. This is a paper airplane in terms of this boom, and that's a critical part of this thing. So I think I just think in this situation, the Air Force made a mistake, and I think Congress has to step in and correct it by demanding that we build this thing in the United States.
They're popping champagne corks in Alabama. Are you?
Well, no, and in Toulouse. And in
yeah, but, yeah, but Alabama votes
sure
on Capitol Hill.
Popping any corks in Everett, Washington.
Have you got the votes on Capitol Hill to turn the Air Force down on what it wants?
I don't know yet. We have to go out and see. We'd be testing the waters here. A lot will be dependent on the hearings on the Hill, and so we're not making any promises, but we're going to make a good fight.
Big issues, big money right here. Congressman Norm Dix from Washington State's 6th District. Thank you very much for being with us, Congressman.
Thank you.
James Wallace with the Seattle Post-Intelligencer and Richard Abulafia. Please stick with us. Listeners, you can join the conversation. We're talking about the big Air Force air tanker deal going off to Northrop Grumman and Europe's Airbus. What do you think? $40 billion, $100 billion? Is the U.S. so flush that we can ship billions off and jobs, la-di-da, to Europe? Is this just the new world? Are we all paying now for Washington and Boeing's ethical meltdown a couple of years ago? 800-423-8255 is our number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Richard Abulafia has been with us. He is Vice President for Analysis at the Thiel Group, an aerospace and defense consulting firm in Washington. James Wallace has joined us from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, the newspaper out in Washington State. He follows Boeing and Airbus and aerospace generally. Bill's calling right now from Northborough, Massachusetts. Bill, you're on the air.
I'm sorry you let Congressman Dix go. He was just breaking my heart.
Let's hear it.
Bottom line is the Air Force made the decision that was best for its service, best for defense. Everything else is irrelevant. To answer Congressman Dix, he can wrap himself in the flag all he wants, but I am a Democrat and I'm an American taxpayer.
Yep.
And I want this deal to go through devoid of all other considerations.
What about jobs in Washington State? Do they matter in this picture?
No, they do not matter in this case. If Boeing wanted the jobs, wanted this contract, it should have been competitive. And I'm not buying Congressman Dick's argument even slightly.
Bill, even if it's $100 billion worth of jobs, I mean, our new stimulus package is only $150 billion. This is right up there on that scale over many more years, but still.
This is a tiny fraction of Boeing's overall business. I mean, we're talking about a drop in the bucket here. And I get back to my original point.
Yep.
You know, we can't make defense decisions based upon politics. There have been all sorts of disadvantages to countries that have done that. And this is so blatantly out of the ballpark, the criticism of this deal. Instead of criticizing whether or not the product is good, they have been criticizing the fact that their constituents won't stand for it and that Congress is Democratic and it's a Democratic area.
The fact that Airbus has been subsidized in Europe, does that matter to you? It matters to Congressman
Dix.
That
is a venue for a different subject. If you want to go to the World Trade Court and protest that, that's fine.
And what about people, Bill, who say, look, our economy is really, really, really in deep trouble. In Ohio, we've been hearing a lot in this primary season, they're voting today. People laid off and lost jobs and factories shuttered all over the place. I mean, are we so rich that even here we can say, fine, Europe, you take it?
We have had so many problems regarding this economy. Sending this particular project in the United States is not going to solve it. We have to go back to basics. We have to, for example, in Alabama, repeal the right-to-work laws, which are anything but right-to-work. We need to make certain.
But that's where this factory is going, Alabama.
I understand that. A lot of people have objected to it because of the right-to-work laws. Bottom line is, let's start raising taxes on people who can afford it, Enron. Let's start looking at our economy and saying, how can we strengthen it? Competition in the long run always strengthens the economy. And I get a big kick out of these people that say, oh, yeah, competition, competition, competition. And now all of a sudden it's, whoa, something's wrong here.
Bill, we've got it. You make a strong case. Let me get one more, then I'll take it out to Jim Wallace and see what he thinks about the way this is all unfolded. Alton in Sterling, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Very quickly, I'm a civil engineer, and I'm involved in bidding of contracts, and I think I have to take a position opposite to your previous caller, and I think Congressman Dix had a good point about the RFP, that you have to bid to what's being asked. There seems to be an overtone here that the Airbus product was of better quality than Boeing's, and if I haven't mistaken that memo or earlier discussion.
It's more than an overtone. It sort of lays it out point by point and says it won on every point and tied on one.
But quality implies that Boeing's product would be likely to fall apart quicker than the Airbus one. You're not comparing apples to oranges. You're comparing the performance of one product against the performance of another product. But they weren't bid to the same specification or to do the same task. The quality may be equal. It's like someone asking for a Gulfstream jet, and then someone comes around and says, well, you know, by the way, you'd be better with a 747. And someone says, hey, you're absolutely right. Gee, forget about the Gulfstream. It's an inferior product.
Alton, we've got your point. We've got your point. And yet somehow Airbus figured it out. And they've got, with Northrop Grumman, the contract. Jim Wallace, I want to come to you on that. But first, I have to go for just a moment here to El Paso, Texas. We have Republican Congressman, former presidential candidate, Duncan Hunter, with us. He's the ranking Republican member on the House Armed Services Committee, formerly chairman of that committee until 1997. Duncan Hunter, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, great to be with you. How you doing?
We're all right. We're trying to figure out this big Air Force decision on the new air tanker going to Northrop Grumman and Europe's Airbus. What do you make of it?
Yeah, well, first, I think it's a bad decision. And regardless of the competition, you're talking basically about two big trucks. These are not high-performance fighter aircraft. These are big old lumbering trucks that that are fuelers that refuel the American aircraft fleet. And what we've done is take a put together a program that's going to extract $35 billion from American workers, American taxpayers, and we're going to spend some of that money in Alabama, but we're going to spend a big piece of it in Europe. And and I've calculated out about 12,750 direct jobs will now go to Europe that otherwise would be taken by Americans. And with the 5-8 multiplier, that means roughly the impact will be about 100,000 jobs fewer in America than if the taxpayer money had gone to an American production rather than a European production.
Our Air Force says they did
well. We'll lose some jobs.
Our Air Force says they did a point-by-point comparison, and Airbus simply won. It's better. It's more, more, we heard the general say, on every count they looked at.
Well, you know something? They may make cheaper generals in some of those European nations. We may want to get some of those generals. If you could use that same argument to buy surface ships from communist China, they can build a warship for about 50 cents on the dollar compared to the American shipbuilding base because they do a lot more commercial work. We can buy Scud missiles from North Korea, and we can probably move into the communist Chinese tactical airline with either the F-10 multi-role fighter or the Su-27 that they're co-producing with the Russians. So the answer to the generals, who sometimes aren't too smart on industrial policy, is why don't we just contract everything? In fact, we can probably find our former adversaries and potential future adversaries would be happy to have the United States dependent on them for every single piece of equipment. But I think the equity argument is this. The average American taxpayer pays about $1,000 a year out of his or her pocket for the defense function of government. And if Americans are going to defend the free world, which we do, spending around 4% of GNP for defense, which is far more than any of our European allies. In fact, you know, we put in a request to our European allies, the same guys that are getting Airbus, to provide roughly 100 more soldiers per year to the southern area of Afghanistan, where we think we're going to have a spring offensive by the Taliban. We couldn't come up with an extra 100 soldiers per European country. They wouldn't send them to us, but we're going to send them 100,000 jobs. I think that's a poor deal.
Congressman Duncan Hunter, let me ask you, though, a question on the ethical front. You know, a few years ago, in 2003, Boeing essentially had this deal, and it was a big deal, many billions even then, and then this whole sweetheart deal came out. Darlene Druyan and the Boeing's CFO and all the rest, they're both fired. They landed in prison. I mean, that seems that did spoil that deal. It may have lost it for Boeing. Are American taxpayers now paying a $40 billion or $100 billion price for a culture of ethical lapse in Washington, D.C., in the Pentagon, in Republican Washington? I mean, are we paying for a kind of a ethical
first,
meltdown
Darlene,
in your governing city?
Darlene Druyan, the government contracting officer you're talking about, I don't think anybody knows if she's a Republican or Democrat, but the facts are, and Boeing certainly has supporters and advocates and represents working people who are from supported by both parties. In fact, I think the biggest outcry on this thing has been from the Democrat representatives who represent Boeing. So it makes no sense. There's no logic to sending 100,000 American jobs to Europe on the basis that Darlene Druyan is in prison now. That's not a very logical connection.
Congressman, we've got a lot of people with questions for you. Here's one, John in Rocky Hill, Connecticut. John, you're on the air with Duncan Hunter.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good morning. How's it going?
Hey, going
good. The point I kind of want to make, and Congressman, maybe you can touch on this, is, you know, I'm a big believer in tough love, and, you know, it seems to me that the kind of coddling that's been put on that's trying to be put on Boeing here is the same kind of coddling that's been put on our auto industry, and it's made our auto industry sluggish, fat, and uncompetitive, and it's killing the auto industry right now. And I don't want to see that happen to Boeing, and maybe this is the kick in the pants that Boeing needs to be a competitive, lean company.
You know, it's
John, we've got it. Duncan Hunter, what do you say?
Yeah, I disagree with you for this reason, John. If Airbus was really competitive with Boeing, they wouldn't need government subsidies to compete with them in the marketplace. They are heavily subsidized by the European countries, who have figured out that it's cheaper to subsidize the company and be able to cut those prices down so they can get deals than it is to have a bunch of unemployed aerospace workers and have to pay their unemployment costs. So if Airbus was truly competitive, they wouldn't have to be subsidized by their respective governments.
But, John, Congressman, you know, John's not the only one thinking this way. The American Enterprise Institute, conservative outfit in Washington, you've got people there saying, hey, this is good for American defense to have real competition for Boeing. It'll put them up on their toes, give us better products.
Well, listen, again, you could take that argument and you could contract out all of our surface ships. You could contract all of our tactical aircraft out. All of America's small arms could be contracted out to the guys in communist China that make AK-47s and SKSs. You could contract out every single piece of the American defense apparatus. But you know something? Even the guy who was the father of free trade, that was Adam Smith, said there's one thing that you don't send offshore, and that's your ability to build military equipment. That's why he advocated in the early days of this free trade exposition that he gave, that they keep shipbuilding for British warships in Britain. He said, don't send that offshore, because when the balloon goes up, you may not be able to rely on the foreign source of that particular piece of military equipment. So I think this is a bad move. It takes away a big piece of our industrial base. And let me tell you, a couple of years ago, when I tried to find a steel company left in America that could still make high-grade armor steel plate to put on the sides of our Humvees to protect against roadside bombs, I could only find one steel company left. So I think we've got people who aren't smart businessmen, and some of the guys wearing the uniform aren't smart businessmen. They get a paycheck from Uncle Sam every month, whether they make a good deal or not. We've had made a lot of dumb business deals, guys, as free trade deals, and that at some point erodes the American industrial base, the ability to produce during times of war.
Yeah, Congressman, another question for you from Scituate, Massachusetts. Greg, you're on the air with Duncan Hunter.
Hey, Greg.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Congressman Hunter.
Hi.
This is an alternative thought on this whole issue. I'm not qualified on the economics issue and all that, and I appreciate the congressman from Washington's viewpoint. But what about the idea that the administration may be using this as a bone to gain political ends in Europe that they wish to have? For instance, supporting us militarily in Afghanistan and Iraq and other places around the world. Is it possible that this big expense would go assigned without any political thinking behind it?
Yeah, Greg, thanks. Duncan Hunter, big trouble in NATO.
Greg, answer Greg, no, I don't think our guys are smart enough to make a deal like that. And if it's a quid pro quo, they haven't demanded any quid. And Bob Gates, Secretary of Defense, just came back from Europe empty-handed when he asked Europe to supply as few as 100 troops apiece for southern Afghanistan. They said, you know, that's real difficult for us to do politically, but it wasn't difficult politically for them to take 100,000 American jobs. That seemed to be quite compatible with their constituencies.
California Congressman Duncan Hunter joining us today from El Paso, Texas, 52nd District of California since 1980. Congressman Hunter, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
One last question. Chris, in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I personally believe if the shoe were on the other foot and this was a French contract, there is no way they would have awarded this to any other country but themselves. And so the question that I had is just how many Boeing products has France ever purchased in their entire history?
Let's ask. James Wallace, do you know offhand?
No, I don't.
I mean, does Europe buy Boeing airliners for their state?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in fact, the Europeans and the Asians right now are the biggest customers for Boeing airplanes because the U.S. airlines, particularly the legacy carriers, haven't recovered financially enough to really get back into the buying.
And Richard Abulafia, what do you make of Duncan Hunter's argument? This is the military. This is different. We're undercutting our industrial base. Does that cut the mustard in the 21st century or not?
Well, all these arguments revolve around foreign policy, competition, subsidies, trade policy, jobs. This is very different from the Air Force's mandate, which is to select the best aircraft for their troops. They've made their decision. Looks like they've done their homework on that. Now, do we want to broaden the national conversation to expand beyond that mandate? That's an issue that's very difficult, because once you get into the question of whether or not the services really ought to broaden their concerns to these issues, these economic issues, you run the risk of meddling across the board with requirements. And the answer to your last question is the French don't do a great job of buying American. And as a result, frankly, their military isn't nearly as well equipped as countries that can afford the luxury of free trade and the ability to independently assess the needs of their forces.
Big issue, big money, and you've both helped us understand it better today. It sounds like we haven't heard the last of this. Do you think this may flare back up in Congress, Mr. Abulafia?
Unquestionably. I think this is just the beginning, really. I mean, because there is that national debate that will happen about economic issues, subsidies, jobs, trade policy, all of these things. And it's heavily politicized, almost on a partisan basis, except for the faction of the Republican Party that basically thinks that defense contract should be kept within the borders. Obviously, Representative Hunter does a good job in defending that viewpoint. But there's no question this is going to be a fierce debate.
We'll understand it better thanks to you both. Richard Abulafia with the Thiel Group in Washington, thank you for being with us today. And James Wallace at the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. James, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.